Hello and welcome to Animal Voices. You are listening to CIUT 89.5 FM. I am your host, Lauren Corman. Very glad to be back after a hiatus. And here with Steve Romanin. And he's going to be bringing us the news, pitching in a few questions. I'm really excited about the show today. We're going to be interviewing both a local person from Toronto. We're going to be interviewing the executive director of the Toronto Vegetarian Association. Of course, we're going to be talking about the upcoming TVA Food Fair, the 26th annual Toronto Vegetarian Association Food Fair. It's always a really big deal. Biggest vegetarian food fair, I believe, in all of North America. The numbers keep growing. We are also going to be speaking with Kelly Childs. She is the founder of a store that is making all sorts of waves called Kind Food, and it's based out of Burlington. And I guess to call it a store probably isn't really accurate. It's much more than that. It's a natural food market. It's a cafe. It's a juice bar. It's a gluten-free bakery. And the reviews coming out of the bakery in particular have been pretty incredible. Friends of mine, when they first went, they came back with pockets stuffed and backpacks full of lots of goodies. And so I had the opportunity to meet Kelly and her partner, Ken, who run this amazing new place. And so we're going to be talking with her about the ins and the outs of running a new business. But before we get into that, and of course, we're going to be talking so much about good food, talk about vegan food and all the different treats that people can access in the area. And I know that Steve, in particular, you said that you were most looking forward to the TVA Food Fair this year because of the food.
Yeah.
Although there's educational components, I'm sure, as a student that you're interested in.
No, it's all about the food.
Mostly about the food. And Steve really impressed me on the ride here today because he was saying that he was going to bring a cooler, which I'd never heard of. You know, when we interview people for the TVA Food Fair every year, I will often say, you know, it's really good to bring, you know, bring your own mug, bring your own cutlery, and just try to decrease the amount of waste that's generated through the food fair. And you're going to bring a cooler, which is a really novel idea.
How am I going to get my vegan cheesecake home otherwise?
Yeah. It's thinking ahead. It's a good idea. Okay, so before we interview David Alexander, the executive director from the TVA, and Kelly Childs from Kind Food, we're going to hear from Steve. He's going to bring us the news.
I am. This one's coming to us from AFP. The article's called Canadian Natives Seal Hunters Claim Win Over EU Ban. Canadian sealers claimed a victory, saying the European Court of Justice had suspended a seal products ban, even though the European Commission insisted the ban would come into force Friday, as scheduled. The European Parliament announced the ban last year after public outcry over Canada's annual commercial seal hunt, which animal rights activists denounce as cruel. The ban would prevent the import of seal products into EU countries. Native groups, hunters, and fur companies in Canada and Greenland were among a dozen plaintiffs that contested the European regulation, saying it was unfair and discriminatory. The principal organization in the proceedings, the Inuit Tapirit Kanatami, ITK, showed reporters documents, court documents stating the ban was suspended for the plaintiffs until their lawsuit challenging the ban could be heard. The Canadian native group ITK provided a copy of the court order saying the restrictions on the marketing of seal products in European countries, quote, is suspended insofar as it concerns the applicants until the order terminating the present proceedings for interim relief is made, end quote. Among the listed plaintiffs were the Canadian Seal Marketing Group, the Fur Institute of Canada, Nutan Furs, the Inuit Circumpolar Conference Greenland, and CG Riberskin AS of Norway, as well as hunters and trappers. A spokeswoman for the European Commission, however, said in Brussels that the ban on seal products would go ahead as planned. Quote, the embargo on seal products will come into force Friday, Commission spokeswoman Maria Kokkonen told AFP. The ITK declined to comment on Kokkonen's statement, saying it would wait for an official statement from the Commission. ITK President Mary Simon said the document showing the interim injunction, quote, is clear evidence that the EU court is very much aware of the seriousness and principled nature of the fundamental objections of Inuit and other plaintiffs to this very unjust law. In our view, the seal ban is both illegal and immoral, she said, urging the European Parliament to, quote, see fit at this stage to do the right thing and withdraw its legislation. Although Inuit are exempt from the ban, they claim that they are nevertheless being affected because it shrinks the market for the product. Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper, whose government is defending the sealers at the World Trade Organization, described the ban as, quote, completely unfair, and flagrant discrimination against Canadian sealers who have been following established rules of animal husbandry. Quote, it is a disgrace that they have been treated this way in some countries based on no facts or information whatsoever, he told reporters. Earlier, Ottawa said it would further press its own challenge of the ban at the WTO by calling for a dispute settlement panel after talks in December failed to settle the row. Quote, we have made representations at all levels of the EU to inform them that the Canadian seal hunt is sustainable, humane, and closely monitored, said Fisheries Minister Gail Shea. However, the European Parliament, quote, has sided with radical animal rights lobbyists, end quote, and left Ottawa, quote, no choice but to initiate a formal application for the establishment of a World Trade Organization dispute settlement panel to address the matter, Shea said. In April, Shea increased by 50,000 the allowable catch of harp seals this past season to 3,300,000. But only tens of thousands were caught. A lack of sea ice in one of the warmest Canadian winters on record and a looming EU ban were blamed for ruining what was to be a banner seal hunt. Most of Canada's 6,000 sealers stayed home, unable to find buyers for their catch, or stymatized by a lack of ice flows for the first time in 60 years on the Gulf of the St. Lawrence, which usually host hordes of seals birthing pups. Only a single ship launched from the Magdalen Islands of the Gulf, where fewer than 50 sealing ships launched from Newfoundland ports further north, down from 500 in past years. All but one of Canada's seasonal seal processing companies also remained shuttered, even though pelt prices were nearly double last year's prices at $21.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And considering that you only brought, not only, but you brought one news story, it must have been a tough decision because there's always so much animal news going on. Why did you choose this one?
Well, this case in particular was covered by the Canadian press in a particular light, and people were left to jump to conclusions about the ban being suspended indefinitely, and that is clearly not the case in this article. They were granted an exemption, and in fact, the suspension is not going to last that long before the court case.
So we have to keep on top of that one.
Yeah.
As things unfold. Steve Romanin bringing us the news. Thank you very much. You're listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. I wanted to say a special thank you to Charissa, who is teching for us today. Thank you for coming in and doing that for us. We today are speaking with two different folks. Our first interview is with Kelly Childs, and we're going to be talking with her about kind food, which has also been making it's just been kind of rocking the vegan communities, and pretty much anybody who's into healthy eating and also really likes food to taste good, it's pretty important. So we're speaking with the founder of Kind Food today, Kelly Childs, and then after that we're going to be connecting with David Alexander, the executive director of the Toronto Vegetarian Association, talk about the upcoming food fair. But without further ado, Kelly, welcome to Animal Voices. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
I met you a while ago. I'm not sure if you remember me, but you were in the midst of, I think you had just perfected some cookies with coconut oil, and you gave me extras, and you are forever endeared to my heart. So
you liked them, I hope.
Oh, they were pretty fantastic. And then there were these cookies that were kind of like Oreos.
Yes. So yeah, we do these vegan Oreos, and they're double chocolate chip with this vegan buttercream in between, and yeah, they're a huge hit.
Steve's making yum noises.
I heard that.
So the bakery, though, it's obviously a focus for Kind Food, but it's not the only thing that you do. So can you just map for us exactly what the vision is and what this has materialized for the store and the cafe and all that stuff?
Sure. Well, you know, I mean, when we first opened, which was May 11th, we sort of didn't know which arm of the business, so to speak, was going to take off and be the most I guess the strong point of it. We've had the bakery, we've got this cafe, we've got the juice bar, smoothie bar, we've got a natural food market, and then we have a produce department too. It's amazing how they all have sort of stood on their own right, and we've had to get, you know, a lot more staff. But the bakery seems to be the focal point for a lot of it, because I guess there's so many people that have not had baked goods for a lot of their lives, and because we've thrown in the gluten-free part of it too, as well as being vegan, those two allergies sort of work hand in hand with a lot of people. But we've, I guess, been so kindly and humbly embraced by the vegan community. We just didn't know that everybody was out there. And for me, I guess that's my sweet point. And lots of tears are shed sort of on a daily basis when people come in and thank us for opening. And it's just this huge, you know, peace, love, and grooviness environment. We see Kind Food getting stronger every day. And so already talking about we need to do a second location and somehow expand because we just are so busy. We've been so recognized by all these different communities. So I think that we've hit upon something that's just going to be a real success.
The notion, too, I think especially with veganism and maybe even more so with vegan baking is there this notion, and it still persists, but there's this notion that it's really, if you're going to be vegan, it's going to be kind of the diet of drudgery and it's about deprivation and maybe you could get some good pad thai or other good foods, but, you know, the baking thing, you probably aren't going to get that real decadent stuff anymore. And I think that your bakery and, you know, and people like Issa Chandra Moskowitz and other people have made forays into this area have started to shift that tide a little bit. But can you tell us about what sorts of ingredients are you using? How are you able to make things that are good for you and decadent and vegan? Because those things often don't go together in people's minds.
Well, yeah, you know, I guess for me it's been like a lifelong commitment to sort of put together really good food. So becoming vegan myself was like, you know, an extra challenge because I was already eating really extraordinarily healthy. I mean, well, at least so I thought. I was still ingesting a lot of saturated fats and stuff. But then going vegan, I brought in a new spin. And when you're dealing with flours that are higher in fiber and higher in protein, like fava bean flours and garbanzo flours and rice flours, brown rice flours, which have a great fiber content in them, and even quinoa flours, which are really high in proteins. And then the oils we use are coconut oils, and the sweeteners are coconut sugars, and a lot of raw organic sugars, it's really easy to make the stuff taste great. Then you're eliminating eggs, and so, you know, we soak the flax seeds, and we're using more applesauce, we use more bananas, and things just take on a natural, sweeter tendency without having to eat the refined stuff that's on the market. I find that people can't believe that our stuff is vegan because they think that they need to use the butters and they need to use the eggs to hold it together. And with just a little bit of, you know, work in the kitchen, it took me about a year and a half, though, let me say, to perfect my chocolate chip cookies. So they were a huge work in progress. And
I thought you were going to say works of art.
Well, works of art, I don't want to say that. I'll let you say that. And they really are, I guess, our namesake. If people are, we have cafes in Toronto now wanting to carry our products, and we're trying to figure out a way now how to wholesale, and it's just, you know, expanding beyond our belief.
I, over the years, I've been vegan now for almost 15 years, and one of the things is that, you know, as much as I can, I would love to promote this kind of decadent, really good vegan baking. I also have been subjected myself to some fairly horrible vegan baking over the years too. How, where do people go wrong if it's so easy to make things taste good? Why, like why is there this disconnect around vegan baking, and why, where are people stumbling in terms of their own baking?
My opinion, and I don't know if that is, you know, the opinion of the majority out there, I think that people are still have a tendency to go vegan and they might still eat unhealthy. So being vegan still can be white flours, still can be refined white sugars. You still can use, you know, the shortenings out there that are veganized, and things can taste pretty empty. And I think that, and I know this might sound really corny, but when you bake with passion, when you bake with a lot of love, I think that it comes through the food. And I've been told this, and I actually see energy work change foods' taste and texture immensely. I can have someone make my recipes, and then I can make the recipes, and they can taste different. But I do think that there's a big difference with using white flours and with using other whole grain flours and using more raw sweeteners like the applesauces and bananas and coconut sugars. And coconut's a really new product on the market. You can get coconut syrups now, coconut nectars now, which compete with the agave nectar market now. And those things have that beautiful rich, they don't taste like coconut, but the coconut tree itself emits this beautiful richness, more of a brown sugar flavoring, and I think that that helps a lot. So maybe it's just the transition of more available products on the market now than what was available before.
there's so many different elements to what kinds of products you're trying to offer, the non-GMO, the emphasis on fair trade, organic, gluten-free. But I did want to, before we try to, in a very short period of time, address some of that stuff. Can you just give us the quick, what's your quick and dirty answer about why we want to stay away from refined sugars and white flours?
Converts instantly into sugar into your bloodstream, converts to fat on your body. Number one, number two, number three, number four causes of diabetes, coronary heart diseases, causes inflammation in your body, can then start causing cancers. There's no reason why you need to ingest it.
There's, I think you have on the website, there's emphasis on this notion of nutritionally dense foods and foods actually that repair the body.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, nutritionally dense foods are, you know, if you take a 400 calories, let's just, you know, talk about animals for a second. So, you know, 400 calories of a chicken breast might cover the palm of your hand. You do 400 calories of spinach, and you wouldn't be able to wrap your arms around the size of the bag of the spinach. So, you know, you can, you get your proteins, you get your calciums, you get your micronutrients, macronutrients off spinach in that bag that, you know, when you eat that chicken, that little piece that's in your palm, much harder for your body to digest. No micronutrients involved in it at all whatsoever. You can't get fiber from animals. And you're basically killing yourself with the saturated fats. So when a food is nutritionally dense, it has per pound, if you want to call it, more nutrition packed into that 1 pound surface comparing it to that other food. So a food like kale, for example, is a perfect 1,000. They're rated on these scales, and kale is so nutritionally dense. It's full of, you know, the calciums and magnesiums and protein, vitamin A, vitamin C, and you really can just completely survive on a plant-based diet. Animal foods are not nutritionally dense. They're actually very nutritionally empty. And so when you compare them and you see how much you have to eat of animal products, it's no wonder we're dealing with such severe cases of obesity now in society.
For people who want more information, because obviously we're just very much skimming the surface here, but you have quite an extensive website. It's kindfood.com, I believe.
Yes, it is. It's kindfood.com. There's no S on the end.
Okay.
Put the S on, so it's kindfood.
Kindfood.com if people want more information. Thanks for the answer. I wanted to move on to talk a little bit more about the cafe and then the market as well. And one of the things that I haven't had a chance to check out the market yet, but one of the things that I thought was really interesting about it is you have some emphasis here on sort of, I guess, conventional for North America, comfort foods like mac and cheese.
Yes. We do mac and cheese, lasagnas. We're going to be bringing in tempeh Reubens and, you know, your classic comfort food, especially coming into fall now. We're going to start thinking that way even more so. So the nice sauces and things that make you feel good. The mac and cheese has been just a great hit. And we make things, again, very nutritionally attractive. So I always try to watch the fats that go into the foods that we're making. Not too many nuts, because, you know, you can sort of OD with a vegan diet, too, with doing a lot of cashews and a lot of almonds. I use nutritional yeast a lot, which is from molasses. It's got that beautiful cheesy flavor to it. And we still use gluten-free pastas as well. So, you know, we're trying to make people healthier by using the brown rice pastas, quinoa pastas, as opposed to using the white flour pastas as well. We're trying to hit, you know, I guess every side of it, because I mean, really the way that I created the menu, and, you know, my husband and everybody else involved there too, we really want people to be healthier. So it's not just a matter of veganizing our menu. It's really bringing in foods that are nutritionally dense, that are much healthier for you, and people are responding.
Mm. Aside from, I know that the grilled cheese is also a top seller, but you have you have things that emphasize greens. You have a beauty salad, which I thought was a fun kind of term for a salad. You have a roasted mushroom and walnut salad. Can you talk about the beauty salad?
I sure can. The beauty salad is a massaged kale salad. So we actually take the stem away from the kale, so you've got this beautiful green leaf, and we spend 5 or 10 minutes massaging it in olive oil and a little bit of a Himalayan sea salt, and that tends to break the leaf down a little bit, so it's easier for your body to digest. So it's a more of a, I'm going to say, a wilted kale salad. It's just outstanding, and we put, you know, nuts in it too, and some raisins and some shredded carrots, And the dressing on it is so simple. It's an omeboshi plum vinegar with a little bit of avocado oil.
I'm sure it's delicious, but I have to say, the notion, I probably would imagine to maybe our non-vegan listeners, the wilted kale salad. It's like, sign me up. No. But it is good. I love kale. I probably should have a shirt that says that. It's one of my favorite foods, but it's one of those scary foods for a lot of people. It's really in how you prepare it.
It's remarkable how many people come in and they see it in our produce department and they ask what that is. They have no idea that that's kale. They've never had it before in their lives. I'm blown away.
I hope there's throngs of people that come in for the wilted kale salad. It's the beauty salad.
Well, it is, and it's great for your skin, so that's why we call it the beauty salad.
Okay. We only have a few more minutes left. You can talk about the market, maybe, and if you... We haven't talked about your emphasis on fair trade, which is obviously important, and organic, so I'll turn it over to you in terms of what you want to share with our listeners before we go out, and then I have just one short little question after that.
Okay, so we have, it's a very inviting environment. And if you check out our website, you can see it too as well. And we've got a lot of restaurant reviews too to actually see on the internet. And people themselves have written in and saying how much they've enjoyed the energy. I think that that's what we try to make everybody feel so welcome when they walk through the door and they see a smiling face. And we really help them choose products off the shelves. We have, a little baking area. We have cereals, olive oils, tomato sauces. We also have things that we make ourselves. We have our lasagnas and mac and cheese and all of our soups. We do a master dal soup. We do a tomato protein soup. We do a lot of other products that we actually keep on the shelf so people can come in and do a grab-and-go sort of situation and have it at home for dinner. They can take it back to work with them for lunch, and it really, really works out well. We've got coconut waters. We've got some other exotic drinks on the shelves, kombucha teas. And we have one of our best sellers, which is our coconut milk ice cream, Larry and Luna's Coconut Bliss ice cream, and it's all different flavors we have of that. So when people come in and they really are struggling and saying, how do I veganize my treats? And we go, well, we have this coconut milk ice cream, and it's to die for, and it's always probably our top seller. Every week we're getting cases of that in. So that's probably it. And we also have our produce department, too, as well.
Great. And we've been talking about it. I did mention at the beginning of the show that you're located in Burlington. This is I don't know Burlington well. Is this downtown Burlington?
We are. We're right downtown Burlington. We're about five shops up from Lakeshore. So essentially almost the corner of John and Lakeshore. We're right at the waterfront. It's a great situation. You can park virtually anywhere. Come and walk in. We've got a patio out front where we seat, 14 people. We have six tables out there, and we've got a couple tables inside. And as the colder weather's coming, we're going to be bringing more tables indoors as well. So we want to accommodate everybody.
So my last question before we go is, because I was so impressed by this really diverse ethical mandate that you're bringing, wanting to provide foods that don't have animal products in them, emphasis on fair trade, organic, no genetically modified organisms, gluten-free, all this kind of stuff, that in some ways I think it must be a tough balancing act, because it seems like you want to get healthy food to the most people, but if you're going to buy products like this or offer products like this to the public, they end up having to be a bit more expensive because you do want to pay farmers fairly and that kind of thing. How do you negotiate having to maybe charge more, or people come in and they're maybe not used to if they're go to conventional stores? How do you sort of walk that line about wanting to not make it exclusive to just people who can afford it, but at the same time trying to keep that ethical mandate?
I think that from what I've been told, our prices aren't bad as far as the grocery natural food market area goes, and we've kept our menu, our cafe menu in the bakery area, I think, very reasonable. Our sandwiches are $7.50, our salads are around $7, $8, or $9, and one of our mottos is cheap food ain't good and good food ain't cheap. And when you realize what you're taking in, what you're ingesting, and to know that it is nutritionally dense, you feel incredible after you eat it. People start to realize that they actually can afford food that's maybe a little bit more expensive when they realize that they're nurturing their bodies and their souls and their mind so much more. So I think it's an education. We just don't let people come in and walk away or, feel bad about what they're doing in their lives, and we try to encourage them and surround them with some really, really great choices and great alternatives. I got to say, I haven't had an unhappy face walk out of our doors yet. They've always been very kindly impressed. Mm. And they do understand that they got to make some changes in their life. And if you want to get those Big Macs that are 2 for $5 or whatever the heck they are and feel horrible afterwards and you're eating empty foods that are doing nothing for you except for causing cancers and coronary heart diseases, that to understand that you're paying to nurture your body for the future and you won't be getting sick and, you know, the, hopefully you'll never get cancers and you'll never get coronary heart diseases. And I think it seems like maybe too,
because I was with a friend of mine who's done a lot of work on class issues, and she was saying, you know, for a single mother with maybe two kids, this wouldn't be the place where she could do the bulk of her shopping. And we were talking about that, you know, and I understand what you're saying in terms of the arguments that maybe you're spending a bit more, but it's more nutritionally dense. And there you're getting more sort of for your money in that regard. But I think that also maybe part of the strategy for people who feel like they couldn't exclusively shop at a place like Kind Food is slow integration, or maybe to get your produce there, but then still you could still rely on sources of other foods if you're feeling like you just couldn't exclusively concentrate your food budget in a place like that.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, you know, we encourage the Meatless Mondays and even trying it 1 or 2 days a week and just trying a whole meal that revolves around, you know, doing something that's meat-free and show them how to make maybe a lasagna or something. And they can get some products elsewhere too. But, you know, our prices really, I don't think are that bad. That people really do understand that, you know, our huge head of kale, you know, that's maybe, you know, $2.50 or $2.95 depending on the week, that how far it will go.
Mm-hmm.
I could show them how to make a kale salad. It can last them 4 or 5 days.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So, again, it's with the education to know that, you know, to make certain things that do last so long, and they can have leftovers and they can take it to lunch and the kids can take it to school. And I think that people are starting to get it. This is bringing it into the kitchen for them. I don't necessarily want them to buy our food already pre-made all the time. I want to show them how to make it at home themselves too. Mm. It's creating a new kitchen revolution for themselves.
You say on the website there's this emphasis on trying to understand better where our food comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I appreciated so much about being in Kind Food was your willingness to dialogue with us about where the products come from, how they affect your body. And I really did feel it was a kind environment. So I really want to encourage people to go and dialogue with the people that are there. It seemed like a great space to learn more. And then there's also, we didn't even talk about this, so I'm going to just direct people to the website kindfood.com, but you do offer cooking classes as well and uncooking classes.
Yeah.
So people can check that out too.
Our first one's coming up September 14th. We've picked a date for it.
Yay.
So, yeah, they can go onto the website and the directions and instructions and stuff, if they want to be a part of it, are on our website.
Kelly, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And
I appreciate it.
All your work. I can't imagine what a year it's been for you. Since May 11th, you said it was been a
since May 11th, and it's been lots of hours. But, you know, it's been so rewarding. We're very blessed.
Kudos to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you so much.
Okay, take care.
Bye now.
Bye. We were just speaking with Kelly Childs. She is the founder of Kind Food in Burlington. Check it out, the website kindfood.com. And our website is animalvoices.ca. This interview will be archived within a week or so. And you can also write us. We'd love to hear from you. If you have ideas for upcoming shows or any feedback on the program, you can write us at animalvoices@gmail.com. We're going to take a short break. And we're going to then hear from David Alexander, the executive director of the Toronto Vegetarian Association. We're going to talk about the upcoming food fair and all the goodies you can expect there and some of the speakers and the entertainment. So please stay tuned for that. Hi, welcome back to Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5. I'm Lauren here with Steve Romanin. I think because I practice your name, I'm saying your last name a lot. Thank you for coming in and doing the news for us.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to now turn from our interview with Kelly Childs from Kind Food, and we are going to be talking with David Alexander, the executive director of the Toronto Vegetarian Association, and we are speaking with him specifically about the 26th annual Toronto Vegetarian Association Food Fair. David, welcome to Animal Voices. Thanks for being on the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
How are you doing? Whenever I do a TVA food fair interview, I'm always a little bit like, I know you're in the midst of craziness and now we're interviewing you, and it just must be a very busy time.
Yeah, it's a little bit busy, but it's all worth it on September 10th when we get there and things start, you know, happening. So
for people who've never gone before, don't know anything about the food fair, can you give us an overview of what the event is about?
Sure. Well, it's put on by our organization, the Toronto Vegetarian Association, each year at Harbourfront Centre. And each year we showcase the latest vegetarian and vegan products and thinking to last year about 20,000 visitors over the course of 3 days. So it is the largest and longest running free vegetarian festival in North America. And, you know, our goal is to prove that choosing a vegetarian diet is healthy, easy, and delicious, and to show people how we can make a difference for animals and the environment through vegetarianism.
Great. What are you most excited about this year?
You know, there's a couple things that are pretty exciting. The first thing is on Friday evening, we have a panel discussion happening called Passion for Compassion. And we will be featuring a number of our speakers in that panel. So I don't know how to say famous, like world famous vegetarian dietitian Brenda Davis will be there. Carol J. Adams, the author of The Sexual Politics of Meat. Jonathan Balcom, who's an animal ethicist and researcher, as well as Terry Hope Romero and Jay Steele and Harold Brown. So that's going to be a really exciting thing. We haven't done something like this for quite a while, and we're really eager to demonstrate how compassion for animals is part of our lives and what people are doing to sort of spread the word. Compassion is sort of the theme of this year's fair. And then the other thing I'm really excited about is our Iron Chef competition on Sunday, where we'll have Doug McNish, who's the head chef at Raw Aura, go up against Howard Dabrowski, who is co-executive chef at Lab in Little Italy. That should be pretty cool, too.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So is that going to be in with sort of the other cooking demos? Like, for people who haven't been there before, can you map where would you go and how would you navigate this and how would you plan your day? Because there's an opportunity to eat when Steve's very excited about this.
Yeah, there's several opportunities to eat.
There's
yeah.
the educational components. You know, you can go and learn about different forms of animal activism. There's environmental emphasis, health emphasis, of course, as well. And then there's speakers. So how would you, I was going to say attack, but how would you approach the food fair if you were new to?
You know, it's a great place for people who are new to vegetarianism. You know, you can start out just by exploring the exhibitors at the fair and checking out a lot of the vegetarian businesses in Toronto. So, for example, you can find King's Cafe there, Adupi Palace, Veggie Paradise, several vendors who specialize in sweets, including everyone from Sweets from the Earth to Boardwalk Chocolates. So I've heard that vegetarian food can be boring. You know, that's totally out the window at the food fair.
Or I'm vegan and can you still eat chocolate, which always breaks my heart when people ask me that.
Yeah, exactly. So I'd start there. You know, we have other fabulous exhibitors who don't do food stuff exactly. We have a lot of nonprofit organizations that are working for animals and for the environment and other businesses that sell relevant products to people who are interested in the vegetarian lifestyle. So you can start there and maybe check out one or two cooking demonstrations. We have popular vegan cookbook author Terry Hope Romero coming to the festival this year. And she has a new book called Viva Vegan, which is a vegan Latin cooking book, which we're pretty excited about. And, of course, in Toronto we have a pretty notable local vegan cookbook author named Jay Steele, and she'll be doing a demo and a talk for us on local eating and how vegetarianism and veganism, they're a part of a bigger picture approach to food. And then, moving into the theater space, we have the talks happening this year. Like I said, we have this compassion theme, so we have speakers who have, you know, Harold Brown, who started out in the farming industry and chose to take action to reform or oppose animal agriculture and sort of reform agriculture more in general. We have Erica Ritter, who's a Toronto-based author who published a book last year called The Dog by the Cradle, The Serpent Beneath, which explores some of the more philosophical underpinnings of how we think about animals in our society. And then, like I said, Carol Adams, her stuff on feminism and animal rights is really interesting, too. So there's lots of really interesting speakers this year, and we're really looking forward to that.
I'm really excited about Jonathan Balcom, probably primarily because he's a really wonderful speaker, as are the others, but he's a really wonderful speaker, and I think that he does such a good job of really bringing to the foreground who animals are. He's done so much great research on how animals experience and know the world, and a lot of his research has been on animals and pleasure, and I think so often as animal activists, we're really emphasizing getting animals out of sites of extreme suffering, which makes total sense. But when we think about their abilities in their lives to also experience play and different forms of pleasure, his ethological research is really fantastic.
Yeah, and that's, I think, one of the huge benefits of going to places like Farm Sanctuary, and, you know, we actually have some local sanctuaries in Ontario that are much smaller in scale than Farm Sanctuary, but basically where people have rescued animals, and you can go and visit these places and actually meet animals, and it's just the exact opposite feeling of sort of the anger about what happens to animals on a daily basis in our food system. You go there and you can really start to understand that animals lead these complex emotional lives, and that the animals we eat aren't that different from the animals we keep as pets. So we're really eager to show that through talks like Jonathan's and Harold Brown's. And also, you know, we're hosting some of the local sanctuaries at the fair as well. They'll be at a table of ours explaining what they do and giving out information to people about, you know, how they can get involved in helping animals directly, and also some of the visiting opportunities.
One of the ways, too, that people can dialogue and learn more about these issues is by approaching some of the advocacy groups that are there. And I know there's quite a big list of different groups. Niagara Action for Animals is going to be there. ARC2 is going to be there. What are some of the other activist groups that will be at the TVA Food Fair this year?
Well, I was looking through the list the other day, and I think there's more this year than there has been in quite a while. You know, the Animal Asia Foundation is going to be there, the Toronto Veggie Pride Parade. A lot of the cat rescue groups, Annex Cat Rescue and Toronto Cat Rescue, both have tables, Ferret Aid Society. So it doesn't stop with farm animals. The fair is really a good place to go to learn about animal issues in general and to find a place where you can get involved, because a lot of these groups, they rely on pure volunteer energy. So I encourage people to check them out. And if you're interested in something that a group is doing, to offer to pitch in.
Now, on its 26th year in terms of putting on such an amazingly huge and wonderful event, I know that you've been involved for a while, and certainly you've had contact with people who've been at the TVA for a long time. How do you think that the food fair is changing? What are some of the trends that you see, or what do you feel like is changing this year, or new things that are going to be happening?
Yeah, you know, I'm not old enough to have been around when it started, so I can only imagine that the response at first must have been a bit funny. The fair has a pretty good history, actually, in terms of its growth. You know, it started out with, I think, about 300 people over one day. The next year it had doubled. You know, the year after that, I wouldn't be surprised if it had doubled again. And the funny thing is, I guess, that it started in its first year, the food fair was called the Vegetarian Information Fair. And people were, you know, they were pleased if they were vegetarian, but, you know, you can imagine how if you tell people you're going to the Vegetarian Information Fair, they're going to be like, oh, that sounds, you know, like something. But as soon as they changed the name to the Vegetarian Food Fair and started bringing in cooking demonstrations, it really started to take off. And, you know, we've been at Harborfront Center for a number of years, and it's just a really brilliant venue for us because, you know, of the mix of outdoor and indoor space and the built-in walk-by traffic. I think the fact that it's grown is a combination of just location and, you know, building an event year by year and being able to demonstrate in a positive way what vegetarianism is like and why it's such a great thing for people to do, whether they're interested in starting part-time or full-time.
So it's not just for vegetarians, which is something I feel like I need to raise every year, because I think sometimes people think, oh, do I have to be vegetarian to go to the food fair?
No, you know, it's from our perspective as an advocacy group, as the Toronto Vegetarian Association, you know, we want to promote this lifestyle to others and support people who've made it. It's just a great mix of outreach. About half of our audience is not vegetarian, and they're coming there willingly. So it's just this great opportunity for us to show people how easy it is, how fun it can be, and, you know, to also encourage them along the way with some of the talks. And then on the other side, for people who are vegetarian or vegan, it provides a real sense of support. Like, there's nowhere else you can go where you're going to be surrounded by so many people who share your values in this way. So it's a great event that way, and I think it's a real success story as a demonstration of how vibrant and rich vegetarianism can be.
David, I just had a question for you as well. I was wondering what role has social media played in promoting the event this year? I've noticed that there's been a bigger focus on using Facebook, Twitter, things like this to promote the event. And I was wondering if you could talk about the increased role those have had.
Yeah, we have been using Facebook for the past 3 or 4 years, and it's been really great. It's a great way to spread this event. You know, we do some events where they're a little bit less spreadable by social media because unless you know a lot of vegetarians, your friends might not be interested. But with the food fair, because it's such a popular event and because it's so open to anyone, we've had a lot of success in spreading that message virally through Facebook, because, you know, what better opportunity to convince your friends to change the way that they eat than to invite them to a place where they're going to be blown away by how great the food is and
get them with the cheesecake.
Yeah, exactly.
We only have a few more minutes left, and I'll definitely turn it over to you for the last word. But I wanted to ask a quick question. It's about some of the criticisms, because I know that TVA does solicit people's responses about the food fair. I know that some animal activists were disgruntled over the past few years about the sort of sequestering. People felt a bit sequestered into the tents, and then there was going to be sort of more emphasis on making sure that there was a more traffic flow to the tents where the activists were and that kind of thing. And so I know that was raised as a concern, but I was wondering how the TVA is involved and how you've integrated some of the feedback about where things could be improved or tweaked.
Yeah, you know, the first year we did that, there was a bit of hesitation. But this year, you know, the tent, specifically the one that we had used as our community tent, is now mixed with other stuff. So there are food vendors in there as of last year. And, you know, there's nonprofits groups who apply to be there. They want to be in that space instead of the other spaces. So I think one of the things that we tell exhibitors when they ask which space is good at the food fair is that they're all good spaces, because the people who come, you know, they want to explore the whole thing. And there's so many people there that if one place looks too busy, then the crowd traffic will automatically redirect into a place that looks less busy. So I think it's something that people are less concerned over now. And like I said, we've tried to really mix everyone into a variety of different spots. And to the extent that it's possible with the expenses for the event, to keep things affordable for a nonprofit. So if you're applying to exhibit at the food fair as a charity or a nonprofit, you'll get a discount on your space. Yeah. So
one of the things, too, that people have often brought up and seems like a good thing to talk about at the end and before our last words is just it's a really good idea if you can bring your own cutlery and your own mugs and plates and things like that, because there's so many opportunities to snack and to eat other food. And, of course, that's not the only thing that the TVA food fair is about, but it's certainly a big draw. So I always feel like I need to plug that, too, for people.
Yeah, for sure.
So we only have a few more minutes left, and so what would you like to share with our listeners in terms of a final plug for the TVA Food Fair coming up on the 10th, 11th, and 12th at the Queens Quay, the West Queens Quay, at the Harborfront Center?
Well, I think we've covered a lot of it, but the food fair is a really fun thing to do. Like, just personally, I know every year I go, it's a blast, you know, in terms of music playing and really engaging conversations with people about these issues, and also, you know, just relearning things about food that I didn't know and about these issues. So, yeah, a lot of people say it's like a vegetarian Christmas. The best part of being a vegetarian in Toronto is, at least for that weekend, is going down to the fair and being surrounded by total awesomeness.
Great. Thanks. Thanks so much for being on the program.
Okay, thank you.
And I'll direct people to the website as well, because there's so much information and we didn't even talk about some of the entertainment. Looks like there's going to be some really great musical acts. And so people can check that out. And I think the website is going to be updated as we get closer to the date as well, although there's lots of information already online at veg.ca.
Yeah, we're doing daily updates on weekdays leading up to the fair. So
great. And that's where it has all the dates too and the time, so people can plan accordingly. Good luck in the final sort of throes of organizing with the TVA.
Thank you.
Of the food fair, and I look forward to checking out the event and really encourage everybody to go. And just always feel like I need to, you know, huge congratulations for pulling it off year after year. You know, I know that you guys pretty much start right away after it happens to start organizing for the next year. So thanks.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks, David.
Okay, take care.
Bye. We were just speaking with the executive director of the Toronto Vegetarian Association, David Alexander. And as I said, the dates are September 10th, 11th, and 12th. I wanted to say again, thank you to Teresa for teching for us today. Thank you for Steve coming in, doing the news, asking a question. And Teresa's going to be doing a music show now for our next couple of hours. And so please stay tuned for that. And thanks for listening to the program. Our website again, animalvoices.ca. Drop us a line at animalvoices@gmail.com. Bye for now.